All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. My name is Alex.
And I am Penny.
And I'm Rinaldi.
And welcome to the Marvel TV Cast, a podcast dedicated to all shows that are Marvel. Today, we are discussing Echo Season 1, Episode 4, Talala. And we have a special guest with us. And yeah, that's right. Kirk couldn't make it because he's trapped in the Atlantaverse. He's going to be down at Atlanta Comic Con this week when we were taping this. So he is scheduled to be back in 2 weeks because that's when we're going to do our season finale because we want to make sure we get him and all that other good stuff. But Penny, tell the listeners a little about the way we're doing the show.
Okay. So even though Disney dropped all five episodes of Echo at once, we are watching and covering it week to week in an effort not to spoil it for any listeners who are also watching the show week to week. We've all committed to not watching ahead, and indeed we have not, and it's killing me because now I can't wait to see episode five. But we, you know, wanted to keep it clean for our listeners.
Absolutely. And for those folks that are listening to it on a different channel, or you're listening it on some other Marvel podcastica type channels, what we've done is we've actually kind of consolidated all the multiverse, all the channels into one Marvel TV cast on your app. So this is actually episode 74, even though it's season one, episode 4 of Echo. So if you have any questions or concerns, you can talk to the powers that be at Podcastica at talkpodcastica.com, and they are with bated breath waiting for your call to answer it at any hour of the night. But let's get started. So Rinaldi, why don't you tell listeners a little bit about you and your love for Marvel? Because when Kirk had to leave or couldn't do this episode, I'm like, we got to have some kind of Marvel expert. So you were the first person I thought of.
Yeah. So when I was young, I was into Spider-Man and X-Men before the MCU started. And then when the MCU started, it helped me to learn about a lot of new characters. And it really motivated me to read more comics of Iron Man, Captain America, and a whole bunch of other characters. And by this point, 2024, you know, I have a lot of knowledge about a lot of different characters, and it all started from just Robert Downey Jr.'s performance in the first Iron Man. And now I'm, you know, invested in what Marvel is trying to do with Disney Plus, including this Echo show. And so, yeah, I think it all started in 2008. And then over the years, I've just, you know, gained a lot of knowledge and investment in this universe.
And I know you had your own Marvel podcast at one point, and for whatever reason, it's kind of not going right now, but I'm just so happy that you have taken the time to, you know, come on with us, because you are our Marvel expert. You know all things Marvel, and we are just here as mere, you know, passengers on this crazy car. But I did want to ask you before we get started, is what is your thoughts so far, not only of this episode, but of the first four episodes in general, since you know, how does this fit? And what did you, were the expectations the same of what you thought of the, what it was going to be like? And what were your thoughts of the series so far?
Well, first and foremost, I want to say Kirk is a super expert. You know, he's way ahead of the game So I just want to shout out to Kirk. But I love the series in terms of we're getting to know this character. Because I didn't know too much about this character. I knew she was like associated with Daredevil in the comic books, but that was about it. So I do like that we're getting to know this character, but I don't know how I feel about this show. This show is very different from a lot of the other Disney Plus shows. So I guess I'm waiting to see how it ends. But I do love the fact that she has this past with Kingpin. I think that's the part I like. And also the combat scenes are pretty cool, but I'm still undecided on how I feel.
And I totally understand that. And for those of you that have heard his name before, he was a very quiet feedback person when it came to Loki. He had very small amount of feedback, and we took no time to read it. Now, I mean, I really appreciate the fact that you really took the time to work out all the problems that you had with your life when it came to Lokiverse. And I'm just so happy that you found time to come on with me, because this is the first time we've gotten a podcast together. And, you know, he's a Zed head,
yeah,
as well as Penny. And I just love the fact that we get to actually do a Zoom to Zoom, face to face, whatever it's called. And this is just good stuff. So, Penny, what is your first take on this episode?
I called it that we would get the grandma's backstory in episode 4.
Okay, everybody, let's all applaud. Penny called it. Crickets.
The grandma would have had some kind of knowledge about the ancestral powers and all that stuff. So I had a moment of patting myself on the back about that. But overall, I thought
She actually is patting herself on the back right now.
Yeah.
No harm in doing that.
I thought the episode was not as thrilling as last week. Last week had the really fun, like, A-team action stuff going on at the roller rink. But all the stuff between Echo and Kingpin was just riveting. And I continue to love all the side characters. So I'm still thumbs up.
You know, you said something just now that really kind of hits the nail on the head. The thing about this show that I just love is it's like an old 80s or 90s show that you'd see on, like, you know, the CW or they didn't have the CW back then, but like it would be right in between, you know, Knight Rider and Baywatch. I know that it would be impossible, but you know,
yeah,
that Knight Rider, Battlestar Galactica,
Dark Angel. Or
I'm saying
even Buffy, and yeah, it fits right into
even
that.
Buffy,
yeah,
because we have to always talk about Buffy, but no, and I mean you're right; it does find a fit there, and that's what I kind of love about it. It's not the villain of the week, because it almost feels like it is, but it's not. But it has that kind of feel, and you know, I was talking to Kirk, you know, because one of the things that he's doing is he's doing an actual Echo piece, and for this show, for Atlanta Comic Con, and I'll have it on his website. And it's got Echo in her suit with Kingpin on one side and Daredevil on the other. And it looks like comic book. And I, you know, folks, when he puts it up on the on Facebook, because we'll definitely put it up on Facebook for you, it looks awesome with the swirls and the top, and you know, it just really kind of encompasses everything that's going on. But that said, since you're our guest, Rinaldi, why don't you give us your first point that you have today?
For me, it was the surprise that Echo had regarding Kingpin's intentions. You know, particularly that he was like, let's just have dinner like we always used to have. You know, she thought he was coming with violence because she blew up his train, but it was like he was trying to rekindle what they had in the past.
Yeah, he was going home in a really weird way. Kingpin could not have been any more creepier tonight. I mean, in this episode, you know, he goes out of his way to be so generous, yet so not generous in the same way.
Transactional in the way that he approaches his relationship with Maya. It's there's a lot of classic grooming and abuse behavior going on, right? He isolates her from other people. He's, I'm the only one who will understand you. We are family. We are the only people that can trust each other. He killed the sign language interpreter. He doesn't want her to have anybody else that knows what's going on in their lives. He's very possessive of her. And the fact that he didn't come to kill her or get revenge, but to win her back, he's more upset about losing a possession than he is about being shot in the face, because ownership and control is his bread and butter. And he wants her power and her ability, but he also wants her unquestioning loyalty. He's messed up. Kingpin is messed.
Well, I think he thinks of Maya as an asset more than a person.
Yeah. I don't think he can think of anyone as a real person. The story he tells about his father and the hammer and all that stuff tells me that he is a sociopath.
And it wasn't even the same hammer.
Yeah. Something happened to him in his childhood. A lot of bad stuff happened to him. And he can't really see other people as real people. Everybody is just either an extension of himself or an enemy or an asset. There's no room for anyone else to be a whole real person.
He's so selfish that what's the first thing that he does when he sees her? He opens up her eye. He puts a contact, whatever thing in her eye so that he doesn't have to learn sign language.
Yeah. I mean, that is cool. And he can also track her. But what an ass he is.
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, and you know, he's been, that whole ice cream scene, which at first value, you think it's really kind of a sweet type of thing. But, you know, when she just stands there and kind of like watches, he's like, ooh, she's my kind of girl.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, you know, we can really have some, we could do some damage with this. So I'm totally with you. I mean, he wanted to make sure he had a nice white suit so she didn't see the blood, but yet, you know, you hit the nail on the head also with the whole family thing. And there is some problems that I do have with not Maya, but her grandmother that we'll get into. But, you know, family is everything for this group. And that's what it comes down to. And, you know, I love how she throws the wine in the sink.
Yeah. Doesn't trust him.
like it was tainted or something.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they have like Shasta, which is probably like one step above, like, I don't know what. It's like the worst. It's like dollar store trash, soda. And, you know, they just look so funny. She has her little Shasta and whatever. It just seems so stupid. But yeah, I mean, he was trying to create something that she wanted. She wasn't buying what he was selling. That's for damn sure.
I think he's upset because he feels like they're the same because they both have dysfunctional families. Like, you know, like his father, at least according to what he said, his father was abusive, so he killed him. And then we know Maya's father was a criminal, and that's why the grandmother blamed him for the
because
it was assassination.
But he keeps forgetting one little tidbit. He's the one that killed him.
Oh, yeah.
Or got him killed.
He's that.
Oh, yeah.
Got him killed. Yeah, set it up.
Yeah. Yeah, you gotta set it up, you know. So, I mean, I guess the what is it? History is written by the winners, and God knows
who's the winner. That's how he operates. He writes the story, not reality.
He's a little in fantasy land. He's definitely a comic book character. I just want to ask Rinaldi before I get to your first point, Penny. What do you think he's all about? The super serum? Do you think he's taken super serum?
I'm not sure. I know in the comic that was like a whole debate. Like, is he have a super serum? And it seems like in the show they're just kind of going on that road. But I don't know. It would make sense if he had some type of enhancement. But I don't know if we'll ever get that question answered.
No, I don't know either. I just, I think what they've done with Maya is they've really set her up for with this implant, set her up so that the other MCU characters can talk to her.
Yeah.
Seamlessly. And, you know, that would be, you've made this point, Penny, several times, how they use silence so well. And I think that, you know, I think they're still going to use silence, but I think that, you know, having that between the good guys is going to really be helpful, hopefully. So Penny, what is your first point?
I wanted to talk a little bit about the conversation she has with Chula. You know, Henry rightly deducts that something spiritual is going on and that she needs Chula. I get the sense that this community they live in is really small. Everybody knows each other. Everybody knows each other's business. And Chula is known to be sort of a spiritual leader, if not an official leader of this tribe and in this town. And so Henry takes her to Chula and makes her go in there. Maya is sort of, you know, recalcitrant, but goes in. And it's so interesting, right? They start with Chula being like, you want some cookies? Like trying to act like things are normal. And Maya is like, you know, cut the shit. Don't act like things are normal. Just talk to me. And they really have a heart to heart. And Chula tells her honestly what happened was she was so angry. She couldn't stand to be around Maya because she was so hurt by losing her own daughter. What she doesn't do is apologize to Maya for what that did to her. Maya is 100% right. She's like, I was a child and I needed you and you abandoned me. And then she also says at one point that Henry left her alone in New York. And I was like, oh, was Henry in New York? So she has a more of a relationship with Henry because he was with her father and her in New York for a while. And that sort of filled in some blanks for me. But her anger at Chula makes complete sense, that she felt abandoned by her at her most vulnerable time. And Chula never made that up to her and still hasn't apologized to her. She did the first step, right? Which was admitting exactly what happened and being honest about it. And saying, I was confused, I was hurt, I was scared, like things, you know. But Maya's right. She chose herself over Maya. And, you know, if you're in this situation out there where there's a death in your family and there is a child involved, I just urge people, put the child's needs first. They don't know what's going on. They don't have any life skills to cope with it. They need you more than you need you at that time.
But to your point, I'm really mad at her.
At Chula?
Because, how do you talk about family, 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 and then disown your granddaughter who has no one?
Yeah.
I mean, she wasn't mad at her over time. She was mad at her from the minute her daughter died. And I just don't understand it. It made no sense whatsoever.
It's a very selfish move.
I think.
Please, Rinaldi.
Oh, no. I think another problem is you're using the father's criminal lifestyle as like, oh, like if my daughter didn't marry you, she would be alive. But then that pushed Maya into follow in her father's footsteps, where if you were actually there for her, she would have a better role model in her life.
I would think if Chula was that upset, I would say, I want to keep my granddaughter.
Yeah, I want to keep her away from you. I want to raise
I mean, like, how many, I mean, how many grandparents have raised kids that aren't theirs? You know, I mean, they've raised their grandkids.
I don't think the father would have growing let that up happen, but it would have meant a lot to Maya for her grandmother to have at least tried, right? Like, now, I tried to take you from your father. He wouldn't let me. It's very different from you haven't heard from me in 20 years.
Or one better is if she was like caring in any way when she left, in any way, even if they didn't talk, if she came back, she knew, well, at least it was some love. But what were you going to say, Rinaldi? I think I cut you off.
I was just wondering if Bonnie knows that, if it seems she might be in the dark about all that, because she's like, you know, why are you pushing me away? And it might be because Maya doesn't want to tell Bonnie what Chula did. But true. I don't know if I'm jumping too far ahead, Because what Shula did was bad. So bad that it may be hard for Maya to even vocalize
come back from it,
but even just vocalize it, even just like just verbally tell people, because that's a lot to process emotionally. It's easier to just kind of bury it.
And a little kid who doesn't have the life skills of an adult is going to blame themselves. So little Maya, all alone in New York, her father is working for the kingpin. And so he's trying to be a good dad, but he's probably not around as much as she needs him. And she's thinking, my grandmother hates me. She hates all of us. She hates this whole family. I have nobody. And that's just sets her up perfectly for Kingpin to groom her. It's a tragedy.
Oh, yeah. No. I mean, he saw the writing on the wall, Kingpin, right away. And, you know, that was one of his right-hand guys. So he knew the deal. And he just needed to know that she was up for the challenge. And then once that was the key, it was over.
Well, the sad thing is, I think Maya is a better criminal than her father, and that might be why Kingpin had him killed, because he wasn't useful. She was more useful than he was. Almost like the daughter surpassing the father.
Yeah. No, I mean, Maya definitely learned from the best, where her father just learned on the job.
Yeah.
You know, there's a difference, like you said. You know, when it's not by accident when you've got families that are good at certain things just because you're born into it. I mean, she was basically born into this lifestyle,
yeah,
of criminal mayhem and mischief. So, I'm so mad at Tula. I mean, especially with the fact that she knows about the powers. She had the powers when she was pregnant. The ancestors came to her. You know, I mean, that was a cool scene too. And I know we're kind of jumping around, but it's kind of all related, I think.
Yeah.
The thing about this show that's kind of confusing is, I don't know if it's necessarily confusing. I mean, and please, you know, tell me I don't know what I'm talking about or not, but there's a lot of moving parts with this thing, and it's not a known story. They're kind of making it up to us. I mean, I know Kirk could probably tell us a little bit more that, you know, in the comic, but I just love how they're tying it all back into the traditions of the actual people. And, you know, you look at the event that they're having, and, you know, Tula is kind of the matriarch trying to set it all up, and it's like half of what it was when they had the stickball competition under I can't think of her name offhand, the one that was in the stickball one, but my point being is, you know, it's just kind of a neat thing. So anyway, anything else, Penny, with that?
With Tula? Just that she told Maya that her mother, Taloa, had healing hands. And I think that had a bigger impact on Maya than we realize. I think that is going to be what saves her from going down the complete dark road in the next episode.
Healing hands.
Just the concept of being a healer, that someone could have healing hands. Okay. I think it's really, really relevant and gonna come back next week.
Well, I just think that now that Maya understands the fact that this stuff that's happening has meaning, and she's not crazy. I've been watching Percy Jackson, the series on Disney Plus, and it's very ironic that they kind of have the same type of journey, in the sense of he didn't know where he came from. And I think you could make the case that the closer she is with her family, the more her powers kind of increase. The same way Percy, the more he went on his quest, he became stronger and understood the game, so to speak. So Rinaldi, what's your second point on this?
Just Henry, as a go-between of Chula and Maya. Like he understands there's deeper traditions of their community, but he was also involved with his brother in New York with the Kingpin. So he's kind of like in between both worlds, so to speak.
You know, I love Henry. And I enjoy any moment that he's on the screen, but he had some powerful moments with Maya this week, also admitting to her that he failed her and being very open and vulnerable with her. I thought that was powerful.
Yeah, he said he was, you know, why I'm 45 years old and not married, and it's because I made bad choices. And one of them was working for the Kingpin, you know, like I can't have a family because they would be at risk. You know, they would always be at risk because I work for him. I don't know if I'm putting words in his mouth, but I think that's what he was trying.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I think that's exactly what he was saying.
Yeah. And that he already has lost.
He's alone because he's alone because he's. Yeah. Including his brother.
Yeah. It's very Hunger Games. Like Haymitch, right? He couldn't take the pain. So he just was alone all the time.
What I find really interesting is how amazing all of her family's signing is, considering she's been gone for so long. Did you ever notice that?
Yeah, they're all really fluent. I mean,
like, and it was like, I have to say, watching them. Yeah, it's just I'll get to a point. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off with your point. It's just, but with Henry, I know how much you love a good Henry story.
Oh yeah, love Henry.
And you know, basically for the listeners, you know, we all know that he could read the phone book to her, and that would be fine.
I was gonna say he makes the whole signing and verbally talking easier to kind of get into, like the actor.
Yeah,
like there's some kind of charisma about him when he does it.
He's an artist with it. I don't know how to explain it other than that. I mean, it and again, please forgive me, but it looks not only that they're signing American Sign Language, but it seems like it's more part of their culture with hands. I know that doesn't sound right, but just the whole everything's about Earth. This whole season, they came from the earth. They talked about the birds. They've talked about all sorts of different things. And, the shadow puppets, you know, everything is about, you know, the earth, using your hands, trying to. So it just seems like it's just a feel good part of the whole thing. I mean, when, you know, I know this isn't this episode, but the episode before when he was talking to, but Maya's cousin, and you know, she's basically saying get out now, and he was saying it, but he wasn't telling her, he was telling her in sign. And the fact that they still use sign to communicate with each other, I think is kind of strange, but also maybe that's just something that they all did to kind of communicate with each other when people weren't around, you know, or when people. It's like your parents when they start speaking in another language, you know, your home language, because you didn't want the kids to know what's going on, kind of thing. But
yeah, or maybe there are other deaf people in the community. It's certainly believable. I think that they were saying that Taloa was deaf as well, but I can't remember the first episode well enough to remember if she was speaking and or signing when we saw her. I guess she was speaking.
No, I think she was speaking as well.
She was signing. She was speaking?
I can't remember. I'll have to go back and check.
You
know, I don't remember now. I thought they all were, but at this point.
Yeah, it's so hard to remember. I also enjoy the way Henry signs. There is a grace to it, and I think he's just a very graceful person.
Because you love him.
I love Henry. I think that all of them are doing a remarkable job of having emotion come through in the way that they sign and the way that they speak and their faces. And they're not always all three the same emotions. And it's really interesting.
No, absolutely. I mean, I know what my what I was going to say before. I just love how, if we could go down this little tangent for a second of signing, how you can feel all the emotions with the signs, whether it's kidding around, whether it's anger, love, whatever it is. They do a great job in this series of really, and Henry, I really think does it the best, shows his emotions on a sleeve, so to speak. I was really kind of worried about that going into it. And then you look at someone like the Kingpin, who has the electronic hands, which there's no emotion.
Yeah.
It's the words, but there's no emotion. So, you know, like I said, it's more like a dance than it is anything else of communicating. Even if they're just using the one hand, it just seems, you know, it's just really amazing. So, Penny, what's your next point?
Let's talk about Biscuits. He was only in the episode briefly, but they gave him the episode thesis statement, which is, there's nothing too broke to fix. If you want it bad enough, don't throw it away. And he says that Shula always told him that, and that's pretty hypocritical because Shula threw away her relationship with Maya over the anger she had at Maya's father. But she wants to repair it now, I think. And, you know, Biscuits is trying to fix the truck, but it's really about Maya choosing her tribal family, her roots, over the Kingpin and his criminal ways, even though her connection with these people is broken, that she can still fix it. There's still possibility in there. And Kingpin is also feeling this way because he wants to repair his relationship with Maya. He doesn't think that's too broken to throw away. And I think we can all learn a little bit from that thesis statement that, you know, you can always fix at least part of a situation or a relationship, and don't throw it away if it's something you care about. I've been thinking a lot about it the last few days, and I think it's kind of a beautiful statement. And it led into this gorgeous montage of, you know, Shula working on the outfit that she had started, maybe for Taloa, it's unclear, and you know, doing this intricate leather work with over the song Down to the River to Pray by Alison Krauss, which I always thought was a Christian song, but the lyrics could refer to any kind of spirituality. And it was extremely beautiful and emotional to watch, I thought.
No, absolutely. And I think that it had a little bit of a Miss Marvel feel to it, where she was making the outfit for.
Yeah.
I mean, and I mean that in a good way. I don't mean that in a bad way at all.
Yeah, because Miss Marvel's mother is the one who makes her the outfit with the.
She finally kind of gets on board, and she's like, listen, if you're going to do this, we're going to do it our way.
Yeah, with like the Pakistani fabrics and everything. Yeah, so cool.
And I just love Miss Marvel because, you know, well, she's from New Jersey.
She's fantastic.
Well, she's from New Jersey, so, you know.
Kamala.
All good.
I love you.
I'm saying, you know, Kamala! All good things come. All good things come from New Jersey. So that said, I just think that it was just really interesting how she's going through her own journey. You know, she didn't realize, I mean, for lack of a better term, she told her story and how they busted her out of the hospital,
mm-hmm.
and the midwives. And they did that for, I think it was like 17 or 10 hours or of labor. And they're holding, you know, she's biting down on wood and everything else. And she's standing up. Oh God, it was painful just to watch. Never mind. I can't imagine what that was like. But, you know, she thought she finished her journey, and her journey hasn't ended either. And I think what happened, and again, I could be wrong because we just talked about this a little, you know, when it comes about her journey, is that her being the elder doesn't mean that she's necessarily the, she has more to do.
Yeah.
And it's not as the elder. And I think she doesn't realize that. And although she's the keeper of the secrets, so to speak, you know, all they say is it's a way, you know, in karate, what's a black belt? It's a white belt that came for X amount of years. You know, I mean, and that's kind of the way it looks like, you know, because we're always learning. We're always learning. And I think that's always really kind of neat. But her speech with Maya, although I'm still mad at her, the actress knows how to friggin' act. So I know I'm going back to that, but it was just really kind of neat. Maybe I'm just getting a little emotional because it's family and whatever. So, Rinaldi, what's your next one?
Oh, yeah, it was Echo just leaving. I guess it's the ending of the episode, but I don't know if we want to go there yet.
No, we can go there. Hey, you're the one that brought it up, so let's do it.
But her leaving and then Kingpin losing his temper. So it kind of reinforces what we were talking about earlier about, like, he's thinking very transactionally, like, okay, we had this dinner, you know, and, you know, I could have killed you for blowing up my train, but I didn't kill you for blowing up my train. And I actually think what you did with the train is impressive. It's like, I did all this. And then you just leave. I don't know where you are. I don't know where you're going. And so, and the fact that I didn't expect her to just up and leave or even be successful at doing that. So it kind of leaves it kind of open-ended in terms of what's going to happen next with her and what decision she's going to make.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it was definitely a jaw dropper. I think, you know, the Kingpin knows that he needs her. Here's a question for you guys. Who needs who more? Does the Kingpin need Maya more, or does Maya need the Kingpin? Now, the obvious answer is the first, but does Maya really need the Kingpin?
So,
Penny?
This gets into my final point, which is that I can't figure out what Kingpin wants. Is he motivated by what he thinks of as love for Maya? You know, his twisted version of love. Does he really want her back because he thinks of her as a daughter or something? Or does he have some ulterior motive? Is he planning some larger revenge for getting shot in the face? Does he know about her powers in some way and want to use them and manipulate her? I can't figure out what he wants. And so I don't know why he wants Maya back.
There's a thing circling around the internet where he wants her to take over his criminal operations so that he can be mayor.
Oh.
And be clean.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, people have said that.
It's not text of this show, but...
No, it's not.
Yeah, in the comics. In the comics, he becomes mayor, so I can see why people are thinking that. But like, Penny,
and again, I'm with you 1,000%, Penny, because like you, I know nothing about this story in the comics. I've never read the comic. I know nothing about it. But and that's why I, you know, when Kirk asked me to do this, I was a little hesitant, but you know. This show, just like all the other Disney Plus shows, I believe within reason, could stand alone by themselves.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you look at Hawkeye. Do you really need to see all of the stuff before to watch Hawkeye? It's good to know, but it's a redemption. I mean, you know, his trials and tribulations. You could go into it blind, I think. Oh, you know, Ronaldo, you know the story better than anybody. Well, do you think that, or am I off base?
No, I think I agree. I think these Disney Plus shows and Marvel have done a good job of like that first episode, they kind of lay out what the characters want. So you don't need the comic. You kind of like they take the motivations of the characters in the comic, lay it out for a first time viewer in that first episode. And that way you can follow the story to the last episode.
Right, right. Now, to the original question, do you think Kingpin needs her more or does she need him more? Because she still does sort of need him.
She kind of does in the sense of like she wants belonging or someone to belong to, and she's dealing with family problems. And when she was with Kingpin, it was like very easy to just bond with him. But he kind of was taking advantage of her anger, you know?
Right.
Like, but then like he himself is just angry, you know? So it's like, I don't know. My theory, and I know this isn't like the text of the show, but I think he's fighting a war with some other criminal organization and he needs a right hand to navigate that war. Like, I think there's a larger conflict that he's in and he doesn't really have anybody he can rely on except her. But that's my theory.
No, and that's a good, you know what? Hey, I'm up for a good theory. I mean, that's why we podcast, right? Is to make bold statements, and when we're wrong, never say that we said them, even though that they're on tape. I said this in the beginning of the series, you know, is Maya good or bad? And you could make a case for, you know, she started out, she was an angry girl. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She's an angry woman, I should say. I mean, she was so, you know, out to...
I thought it was funny when she kicked the ice cream vendor. I'm not going to lie. That was funny. That little girl was
And that is every 9-year-old's like dream right there, is to kick the ice cream man when they say no.
Yeah.
Well, that guy, I mean, I don't think he had something coming.
My daughter probably would have done that, and she's the sweetest person in the world.
I mean, he was a jerk.
Yeah, he's being rude.
Yeah.
It's a little kid.
He also takes flies off of the wings of bugs too.
Yeah, he's a horrible person. I didn't cry for him getting beat up by the Kingpin. It was pretty brutal though. That's a brutal beating.
It was. He got beat down.
Yeah, that was harsh. And then when Kingpin and Maya walk away, I've been thinking this the whole time of the series, but there's just so much Thanos and Gamora going on. And it's so similar because Thanos always wanted Gamora to come back to him too. He was like, I don't care if you tried to kill me. You're my daughter and I love you, until, you know, he had to sacrifice her. But I was like, have we seen this story before? It's kind of familiar.
Okay. So that said, Kirk brought this up and I'd love to get your take, Rinaldi, and about the street Avengers. Meaning, you know, because Penny brought up the whole Thanos, Gamora, and now we've got, you know, Kingpin and Maya. What's your thoughts on that street version or that Earth version of Avengers / that storyline? Is that something that you're excited about as a Marvel fan, or are you looking for something different?
No, I'm very invested in seeing more street level characters. I could be wrong. Kirk is welcome to correct me next week, but I think there was a series called Marvel Knights where it was all these street characters in New York forming a team.
There was one. I'm just saying.
Yeah, they called it Marvel Knights. So it would be cool to see that live action on Disney Plus with different characters.
How was that different from the Defenders, or was it the same kind of group, just a different name?
It was the same group, but a different name, mm-hmm. and not as many characters, but yeah, same concept. So it'd be cool to bring it. I mean, essentially they would just be bringing it back, but to Disney Plus instead of Netflix.
Yeah. But I want Jessica Jones back so bad.
Well,
I love
that. That was my favorite one out of those four.
I'm not going to lie, and I hate to admit this, especially with Penny in the room, I've never seen Jessica Jones.
Oh, no. I can never forgive you, Alex. No, it's fine.
I know you can't. I'm surprised you talk to me now. No, but I love bringing these bigger Marvel questions up because one, I just find them fun. You know, yeah. I find it fun. And two, nobody knows what anybody's going to do.
Yeah.
The only people that know are the execs at wherever, and Nurse Sarah's all not going to tell us. But three, they have so much awesome content to pull from. It's just going to be so interesting what direction they go into, especially now with the multiverse, and they're bringing Deadpool, they're bringing the X-Men into the MCU. And how is that all going to, I mean, the big question is, where were they for the big war? You know, why weren't they there? I mean, they're going to justify it by saying it was a different multiverse.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's an easy way to write it right in there, but it'd be neat if they could definitely write a better twist on it than that, but we'll see what happens.
We'll see.
Penny, did you have another point? I thought you did.
I have just one tiny thing, and it's not even a note or a point. It's just that I can't stop thinking about the movie Zombieland and how, is his name Tallahassee? No, that's Woody Harrelson's name. The other character, the one played by Jesse Eisenberg, you know, he has this list of rules for surviving the zombie apocalypse. And,
Ohio.
And a big one, Ohio, right, is a big one is double tap. And every time I look at Kingpin with his one eye and his other eye doesn't even look that bad, I'm like, man, she should have double tapped that. Like you got to double tap to make sure that your hit succeeds, because you don't want exactly what's happening.
I'm sorry. It was Columbus.
Columbus.
It was Columbus. I was thinking Ohio, but it's Columbus. Yeah, I forgot. Yeah,
Columbus. They're all city names.
Exactly.
But yeah, every time Kingpin comes up on screen, especially when he pulls the eye patch off, I'm like, double tap. Like it's like a refrain in my head.
See, selfishly, I'm happy she just didn't do that, because now we will get this Marvel Street universe on Disney Plus. Like if she had double tapped, I wouldn't be entertained, because like, I love the street stuff. Like I love the grittiness. So, I mean, I like a lot of different things in Marvel, but that's my favorite world to play.
I'm going to tell you right now, if he was sitting in a chair, like when he come out in this episode and just said, Maya, I would have lost my shit, because it would have been just like Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah.
And I just, oh my God, he scares the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Vincent D'Onofrio?
And I know that.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I know that role was like 1,000 years ago. He's done all sorts of different things, but that friggin' character, Homer Pyle was
seriously crazy.
He was short of a picnic, short of sandwiches, and I just, that's all I think about when I see him. And he's a megalomaniac kingpin, so it makes it even like more plausible that he would go that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I know it's not going to happen.
We've talked a lot about the acting on this show, but we haven't really talked about Vincent D'Onofrio and just how well he inhabits this Kingpin character, how menacing he is, the way he moves kind of slowly, but with power, more like how, you know, like a aircraft carrier moves slowly, not like how somebody who's weak moves slowly. Like he oozes power and violence, and his soft-spoken way he delivers his speeches. He is a scary, scary man. And I remember seeing Vincent D'Onofrio in a lot of roles early in his career. And then he did that amazing Men in Black role where he's an alien in a human body. And I had no idea he had it in him to do that. And then when they announced him for this role, when he was in the Daredevil series, I was like, D'Onofrio? Wait, oh, maybe. And then, you know, he knocks it out of the park. And he's so good in this that you forget that he's acting almost. He's so good.
Terrifying. He's definitely exactly what you want in the character. That is for sure. But what we're gonna do, let me just look at the time. Oh my gosh, how do we talk for a whole hour? We are gonna take a quick break, and when we come back, we're gonna talk about some news, and we're gonna talk about some all sorts of good stuff. So catch on the other side. And we're back from the lobby. And Penny, do you have any news that is fit to print?
So I read a really interesting article, and it's kind of like a dubious honor, but the budget for Echo set a surprising record for Marvel Studios. It's the least expensive of all of the Disney Plus shows that they have produced. So it's not a secret that I loved She-Hulk. I podcasted about She-Hulk. It is not getting a second season, at least not anytime soon, partially because the budget was gigantic. It cost $250 million, supposedly, to make that show. Echo came in at $40 million, which is staggering. And if it even got halfway decent ratings, it means that Marvel could make a lot more shows like this. So I think it's really good news for all of us.
It's because the actors were cheap.
And also, there's not tons of CGI, right? It's like, it's all very realistic. And so a Jessica Jones, a Daredevil, these street level heroes can have shows that are a lot cheaper than the other shows that Marvel makes. Like Secret Invasion was over $200 million as well. It's just $40 million is just, by comparison, so reasonable that I hope that Marvel is like, let's make 10 of those instead of, you know, two super expensive shows. Although, well, please make She-Hulk 2.
Yeah, they made her leg out of like parts around the junkyard. And
it's very economical.
I'm telling you. And, you know, they're. No, but I think that's a really interesting thing. And I don't know if that's, you know, when I read that originally, I'm like, well, I'm surprised people aren't outraged because of the fact that it was the lowest budgeted thing. And
it's
of
the
course,
one that's about marginalized people. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, you know, you got them on the cheap. I mean, you know, whatever. But I just think that hopefully that This goes to show you don't need to make a blockbuster with a blockbuster budget. Now, I mean, we're in a bubble, or maybe I'm in a bubble. I don't really read a lot of the stuff, but from everything I've read, it seems like it's been a success. But I don't know. I mean, I keep going back to this one thing that Stan Lee said. And he was talking about Black Panther, and it was like this A&E special about Marvel. And he's like, would you have ever thought a white kid would wear a Black Panther costume for Halloween? And that's happening.
Yeah.
The same way you would think your average white kid would wear a Maya outfit, an Echo outfit for Halloween. I'm hoping that it does become mainstream, and that, you know, that not only the deaf community, but the non-deaf community or the hearing community can really embrace her. And I think that this is one of the few times, I know we've talked about this before, Penny, you know, This is a strong female character that breaks a lot, that checks a lot of boxes.
Yeah.
More than just her being female, I think, is actually a couple of layers down.
Right. It's
from all
deaf,
the other things.
Amputee and Choctaw are her biggest identities, right? And then female is in there, but that doesn't seem to be a big part of her character. There's no gender issues or romance issues or anything going on in this story. So that's kind of irrelevant. She just happens to be female, and the powers seem to be female, right? They're matrilineal in the way that they're passed down. But
yeah.
I agree with you that it's a tertiary part of her, and that her other identities are much more important and much more interesting for a viewer, right? Like, I love being able to see a slice of Choctaw life and see what, you know, their culture is like, because it's not something I get to see every day.
So,
it's cool.
So imagine you were back in the 70s or 80s when they created her. Okay, let's get a character and you put her in this situation. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall when they actually proposed this.
Yeah, I mean, the original version was pretty culturally appropriative.
So I looked it up. It was she first appeared in Daredevil in 1999.
So that's not too far back.
Yeah,
that's pretty recent. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It seems like Daredevil is like the way to introduce, like, Jessica Jones has ties to Daredevil as well. So it seems like,
I guess I really need to watch Daredevil.
He's kind of like the Iron Man of the street level universe.
Like, yeah, he started it. He's the hub.
Yeah.
Now, do you still have the same affinity for Daredevil, Penny, as you do Henry?
I enjoy Daredevil. I think he is a little bit of a excuse my language, fuckboy. And you know, he gets together with Jennifer Walters in She-Hulk, and I think that they are a good pair, but I would not personally want to be involved with Daredevil the way I would with Henry.
So you like the guys that are the bad boys, huh?
I do like a bad boy, but not too bad.
I understand.
Not a you need to get it together, boy.
Yeah, like Henry.
Henry makes his own money. He might be crooked, but he can make his own money.
And he like runs a business. He takes care of his people.
And the most important part,
he's hot.
He's trying to make America skate again.
He is trying to make America skate again. And I respect that.
Henry's got it together. Matt doesn't.
Yeah. I have a no lawyers rule. So Matt Murdock is out. Just out of my dating pool.
We did a lot of pro bono work, though. Does that count? Does that help?
It's not about that. It's about the lawyer brain and how I have enough of it of my own. I don't need another one.
Okay.
Gotcha. Yeah, we have enough lawyers on this cast as it is. no, but I just love that, you know, they are intertwining everything. It's making sense. I think they did a great job with Winter Soldier, where they really used the movies. They did the same thing with Loki, and I think they did the same thing with Hawkeye into this. My point being is they're really doing a great job of intertwining everything.
Yeah, Ryan Reynolds posted on social media, I think on Wednesday, a few days ago, in late January, that Deadpool 3 finished filming. So it's officially done with filming. And yeah, in his post, he thanked everybody that was involved with the production. And
you're welcome.
And according to this website, Bleeding Cool, it's the only MCU film released in 2024 that's going to be released in 2024.
Oh, that is excellent. The rumor that Kirk had said earlier on the podcast, and when we were doing Lokiverse, and I just can't believe it's going to be the only one. But hey, it is what it is, and we'll do the best we can with that. And
I was just going to say that there has to be some surprises, considering it's a multiverse movie, and it's the only movie coming out.
Oh, they're gonna probably throw everything into it. Now they can go to 300 million because it's the only one. So it's like, you know.
Yeah. Audiences are going to be starved for some superhero action and just crowd the theaters. It's going to be a huge movie, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, you know. But so that said, what are you guys watching these days? Penny, what are you watching right now?
Well, you know, I'm doing my Buffy rewatch for the Still Slaying podcast, and I have been complimenting that with a Charmed rewatch because I watched Buffy and Charmed together when they first came out, so I'm watching them together again. Charmed is hilarious. It is so unrealistic and campy and over the top and a fashion show, and I
love
it.
Charmed.
It's so fun.
It's so bad.
It makes no sense, and it's delightful. On a more serious note, I just finished Fargo season 5, and that was absolutely fantastic. It was I think the best season of Fargo to date, and the other seasons have also been really good. And it's really powerful stuff, and I recommend it to everyone, but use caution when viewing because there are some really difficult subject matter that it covers.
All right. Rinaldi, what are you watching these days?
Right now, I'm doing a rewatch of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Nice.
You're yeah. Such a suck up. You're such a suck up on the Marvel channel. Come on.
I love Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's good.
And then I'm going to, this is kind of embarrassing, but I'm going to watch Andor, the Star Wars show that was on Disney Plus, and then leading into the new season of Bad Batch, which is a Star Wars animated series. So I guess
I don't know why that's
doing a little bit of rewatch
show.
What was it?
No. That's my show.
Yeah.
Bad Batch is my show. So
yeah.
That right now I already hear Kirk saying, Jesus Christ, Alex, you always have to bring it back to Star Wars or Harry Potter. Because it's my favorite.
I want to understand why Rinaldi thought watching Andor was embarrassing, because Andor is brilliant.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, that's the embarrassing part.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm trying to do like a double feature, Andor and then Bad Batch.
Got it.
The problem with, and it's not a problem, I should say, the difficulty with Star Wars right now, and similar to MCU, there's just so much friggin' content.
Yeah.
You just watch don't it know all. Where to kind of, you don't, but if you watch it, like, it's just getting interesting. I mean, I have to say they're really putting a lot of effort into all these shows, and it's fun. And I think you're going to, like, I never liked the star of Andor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. I just didn't like his character. Like, okay, fine. I mean, he was great at, oh my God.
Rogue One?
Yes, I couldn't think of that stupid name. He was great in Rogue One, and I liked it, but it was like, okay, he's going to die, so what's the problem? You know, what's the big deal? But I got to tell you, it shocked the crap out of me, and they really did a great job of doing some deep dives and making me want to care about everything. And they're, you know, it makes the political stuff in episode one a lot better. So let's just leave it at that before Kirk gets mad at us, cause it's not MCU.
Yeah.
You know, right now I'm watching, I'm on this World War II kick. I watch Band of Brothers like five times a day, and now I'm starting to watch the Pacific. But then I'm watching Masters of the Air, which is brand new.
Oh yeah, how is it?
And it's amazing. And
the cast is unreal. It's such a great cast.
Yeah, the cast is crazy. The other movie I just watched was one of the stars from Masters of the Air was also in this. It's about the 1936 rowing team in Washington. It's the boys in the boat.
Yeah, the boys in the boat. George Clooney directed it.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm going to tell you, the movie was good. It really was good. I loved every second of it. But PBS actually did a 1-hour special before this whole thing. And if you can watch it for free on YouTube. It doesn't even scratch the surface of how amazing these 9 men were that decided to all work together and win the Olympics during Hitler's Olympics. And, you know, just watching all this, all these war movies, you're like, these people were so lucky, brave, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, it makes my life, it's like, I got to go do something because these people were just amazing. And, you know, I don't care who they are. But that said, Penny, why don't you tell people how they can get in touch with us?
Sure. If you want to reach us, there's lots of ways. You can reach out to us on the Podcastica Facebook page. There's also lots of fun chats that happen on the Podcastica Facebook page about anything that you might imagine. We get into side conversations, and it's good to bond with your fellow nerds. You can email us at talk@podcastica.com. And of course, you can catch us next week when we cover the finale of Echo, episode 5, entitled Maya.
Absolutely. And I can't wait to go watch it right after this. And folks, if you are looking for some other podcasts to listen to, you've got the Ted Lasso Revisited. We've got Run for Your Lives. They're doing some movies. We got the Walking Dead Rewatch, which is taking a break to do Living Dead, I think.
Yep,
Living and Dead. From we're doing our rewatch. We just got our 50th episode.
Congratulations.
So they're, yes, I'm very excited. I can't believe we actually got that far. And then whenever, you know, Ryan Reynolds decides to release his movie, we'll be back here and doing the rewatch or the movie review, which maybe Kirk and Rinaldi and Penny will do, or who knows who will do it. But, you know, it's all, there's a lot of good stuff going on. Plus, you know, we, like you said, the Bad Batch, I know we don't cover it, but there's a lot of other great podcasts out there that do that as well. So, you know, the bottom line is it's cold out. You might not want to go outside or whatever else, you know, snuggle up to one of our podcasts. And if you have Ted Lasso, it's always a good day. So that said, thanks for listening to our podcast. My name is Alex.
Oh, my name is Rinaldi.
And I am Penny. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.